My name is Jonathan. I work at an exchange based in Tokyo called Bitbank. And one of the currencies that we currently list is Ethereum. I was the person that implemented the, you know, deposit withdrawal system for Ethereum. And also, I originally was the person who ran the full node that we have running in our backend. So I currently don't work on Ethereum anymore. I stopped working on it a little bit after CryptoKitties, but I am in close contact with the person who is currently working on maintaining our full node, keeping it up, and we're all on the same team. We're all aware of all the problems that are going on, so I feel like I'm qualified to speak about dealing with Ethereum from the perspective of a exchange.
Okay, thank you for that. And finally, Jameson.
Yeah, so I worked at BitGo for 3 years, basically building and maintaining infrastructure that BitGo was using to help service enterprise clients and manage their multi-sig hot wallets. So I started off in Bitcoin only, and after I had been there a year or so, we then decided to work on Ethereum support, which took us about a year to get to the point that we wanted. And we ran into a ton of challenges, both on the, you know, running a node, running fully indexed databases to help be able to look up transactions and balances, and then, you know, managing the actual sending logic, and of course the smart contract side, you know, building a multi-sig smart contract. So I had firsthand experience, you know, getting paged whenever there were any issues with the infrastructure, and, you know, testing out different types of nodes, seeing what the performance was. And while these days I'm not actively maintaining or working on Ethereum infrastructure, I do still on an annual basis do a test of all of these integrations to try to keep track of the progress of the ecosystem is from the performance of their nodes.
Okay. Well, our involvement at CoinFlow is really easy. We don't list it anymore because of various issues, which we can talk about another time. But this point is quite relevant to my next question, which is the audience will have probably a range of different backgrounds and experiences with Ethereum. But could you guys summarize in your mind how you describe Ethereum, what it is, and what you see are the greatest strengths, its weaknesses, and what are the concerns and challenges that you have with it or have had with it if you're no longer using it? Maybe we'll start with Jonathan.
Okay, yeah. So if I were to describe Ethereum in a very simple set of terms, whereas Bitcoin is basically a single state of UTXOs, which are, you know, either spent or not spent, Ethereum is a very complex global state where each account has all these different types of, you know, you can store values, you can store all of these things in it. And because of that, there are a lot more game theoretical aspects to Ethereum, and also it makes it much more difficult to run as compared to something like Bitcoin. So I think that one of the biggest weaknesses, although, you know, a lot of people would probably argue that running a full node is not important, I would assume that everyone or almost everyone at this conference is probably of the mind that running a fully validating node is something that is important to cryptocurrency. With Ethereum, that is exceedingly difficult day by day. We have to increase our budget for running our full node almost every month. It's very difficult to run. However, its strengths are the network effect. And one thing that I think a lot of people see as a negative, which I think is actually a positive from a network effect, you know, point of view, because of the fact that so many smart contracts are open source, where the source is openly available, A lot of people feel like they can just grab a contract from a popular, like, let's say Uniswap or something, and then change the name, redeploy it, and then all of a sudden they have a clone, which, you know, it can be a good thing or a bad thing. But one thing that it definitely is it really does help the network effect of developers. Whereas when you're building a Bitcoin wallet or an application based on Bitcoin, it's very like, even if you copy paste the source code, the Bitcoin applications are usually very, there's a lot more than just the code. Whereas in Ethereum, if you copy paste an ERC20 and you change the name of the coin, suddenly you have just a new ERC20 that is named whatever you named it. And you don't have to do anything else, and everyone else can use MetaMask or whatever. So it's very streamlined for developers, which I think is a great thing, because one thing that I find difficult, especially when we're hiring for developers, is a lot of people, they've touched Ethereum and Solidity because it's so easy to just copy and paste. And as we all know, developers are basically just copying pasting machines. So a lot of people have touched Ethereum, whereas not many people have deep experience with other cryptocurrencies such as, you know, Bitcoin and whatnot. So I do find that it's really good for getting developers on board with the ecosystem and starting developing tools and things like that. Whether or not it's useful, or whether or not it's decentralized, or whether or not it's, you know, all these other things which are kind of putting the cart before the horse, that's a different topic. But I definitely do think it does get developers excited, and it makes them feel like they have a good understanding of Ethereum because they were able to, you know, copy and paste and get something running really quickly without needing to, you know, train for 5 months or have a deep understanding of cryptography or anything like that. So that's a strong point.
So basically, it's technically, the infrastructure is far more complex than Bitcoin, but the offering to a developer is a much lower entry requirement, and so it can get adoption more quickly. Whether that's a good thing or not, or gives a full sense of capability, is a different question. Let me pass the question on to Jameson.
Yeah, I mean, in general, I would say that Ethereum's strengths are its weaknesses. It is simply making a different set of trade-offs than Bitcoin has made. And the result is, you know, you do have this quote-unquote world computer where you could say, you know, Bitcoin and Ethereum are the same in the sense that they are distributed ledgers. They are a new type of distributed append-only database. But Ethereum provides much more, I guess, developer ease of use when it comes to manipulating that database in a variety of ways. And so the trade-off is that developers can create more rich applications that live entirely on this network without having to build things outside of the network. Really, it seems that Bitcoin is more focused on validating and doing more things off-chain, and then having the smallest amount of data necessary on-chain to validate whatever those off-chain operations were. Whereas Ethereum is allowing you to do a lot more on-chain, which makes it a lot easier for developers, easier for people to get into and start using these apps without needing other infrastructure. But really what it's doing is putting a lot more load on the network itself. And that's where the network operators, whether it's individuals or enterprises, end up having a lot more pain trying to keep the network going.
Yeah, I think it's so. Trade-offs, the question is, do some of those trade-offs over the long run lead to potentially centralization risks up to a greater degree than potentially Bitcoin? Andreas?
Yeah, I mean, I'd say most of the important points were brought up already. The main difference between Bitcoin and Ethereum is that Bitcoin is what we call UTXO-based, which means if Jameson sends me one Bitcoin and I would like to send half a Bitcoin to Obi, I would then send the one Bitcoin out to the networking transaction where half goes to Obi and half goes back to me as change. And then I can spend my half Bitcoin for something and Obi can spend his half for something. Well, in Ethereum, it's what we call account-based or nonce-based, which is similar to what we know from Ripple and Stellar, and I believe also maybe EOS. And I'm not sure why they made that decision when Ethereum was made, but not using the UTXO-based system has a lot of weaknesses, especially if you are sending transactions rapidly or if the fee landscape is uncertain. So I'm sure even, you know, pretty normal users of Ethereum today jumping on the DeFi train, they end up in a situation where you're staring at your MetaMask and a transaction you're trying to send is not going through because the fee was not high enough. And then you try to send another one. Now that one is not going to go through because the first one must confirm first. And you end up in this really nasty situation. While in Bitcoin, this is not a problem because if I do send the one Bitcoin to the half Bitcoin to Obi and half back to myself, then I can immediately spend the half Bitcoin and send it to Jameson without the initial transaction getting confirmed. So it might take a while, but it will confirm eventually, and all of my transactions will confirm at the same time then. So yeah. I would say that's the major downside of Ethereum that we're seeing today for normal users, without touching on you know, the difficulties of operating a full node of Ethereum in a production environment.
Yeah, I think actually on a recent What Bitcoin Did, Peter McCormack podcast, Vitalik and Andrew Polstra were discussing the account-based versus the UTXO-based trade-offs. And Vitalik admitted that if he'd realized the complexities related to that, he might have taken a different path. And challenges like the ones you've mentioned and others have meant that over the coming few months and years, Ethereum is set to go through a number of major updates, culminating in the move to what they're referring to as Ethereum 2. Not all of you are using it, but what are your thoughts on Ethereum 2, how it differs from Ethereum 1, and what's your thoughts on the viability of this approach? And if you are planning to be using it in your systems, how are you going to plan the transition from Ethereum 1 to Ethereum 2? Jameson.
Yeah, thankfully, I get to just sort of watch this as a passive observer now. And I forget how many years we've been watching it happen so far. I think it's still going to be at least another year or two before enterprises really have to worry about starting to transition their infrastructure. But I certainly have a lot of questions around how that's going to end up working. The short version of all of it is, well, from the technical diagrams and articles that I've seen, it appears that Ethereum 2 will be adding a fairly significant amount of complexity to the operation of the system. And, you know, one major question will be how feasible it will then become for any individual or any entity, even enterprises, to fully validate the state of the system. You then get into even lower level questions of having to worry now about different shards and what's operating on different shards and whether or not different enterprises are going to have to essentially start building this like cross shard management logic into their system.
Okay. And Jonathan?
Yeah. So similarly to what Jameson was talking about, as far as we are concerned, right now we kind of have our hands full with Ethereum 1.0. Okay. And kind of, you know, we have been messing around with some of the, you know, dev, the testnet and whatnot for the staking and all that stuff. But to be quite honest, right now we list Ethereum. And if Ethereum 2.0 is going to be a different coin that has like backwards compatibility by making the old network into a single shard on the multi-shard network or whatever, I personally think that it's going to be an interesting social experiment for the crypto community to decide, okay, so what exactly is Ethereum? So is Ethereum something that's that is a balance that is given to you by value granted to you on the global state of the Ethereum blockchain? Okay, what is the Ethereum blockchain? You know, what about the old Ethereum 1.0, 2.0? Are they going to have different prices? Are they going to be different coins? Or, you know, it, there's a lot of questions I think that the that as a community will need to answer moving forward. And I'm sure a lot of people who are very into the community are like, of course it's going to be the same coin, or they might already have their opinion set. But we also have a lot of due diligence that we need to do for these coins, where if some hard fork completely changes the attributes of a coin, then we need to make sure that it's something that we are able to secure, so that our, our customers who are giving us their coins do not need to worry about, you know, some bug in the system destroying a whole bunch of the ether that we're holding for them or something like that. So, so yeah, for 2.0, whether or not 2.0 is the same coin as Ethereum or not is going to be one of the main things that we're watching moving forward. And if it turns out it's going to be a different coin with a, you know, a different, theoretically a different price, and it's not tightly coupled, then we would have to go through all the regulatory hoops and basically do everything we did for Ethereum with Ethereum 2.0 or whatever they call it. So right now we don't have any specific plans, but we have been testing the testnet stuff for 2.0, and we've been playing around with it. And it looks like it's going to be a little bit more difficult to run a what they call archive node currently. And I don't even know if an archive node would be possible moving forward. I'm not exactly sure how we're going to 100% verify everything to make sure that we're not getting screwed over. So that's our stance right now.
And and Andreas?
Yeah, so the word sharding has been brought up a bit, and without being explained, so I can just do that quickly. It's sharding is what we call in computer science, especially distributed computing, which is very similar to if you use Facebook. So, I mean, Facebook cannot store everybody's information on every server they have, right? It's like hundreds of thousands of servers, I'm sure. So what they do is they try to figure out who you interact the most with, which is for most people is people who live in the same town. So they will store information about people who interact with each other a lot on the same server. So that's what we call a shard. And for special cases like celebrities who everybody's following or newspaper, they will be stored on sort of a global shard or like a global server that everybody can interact with quite easily. And the issue with sharding is if my Facebook is really tuned to me talking to people, you know, in the same country I live in, and I then want to interact with people in a very different country for some reason, then internally at Facebook, it's a real pain for them to keep transferring data between the servers, between the server my profile is mainly on and the server where whatever discussion I'm involved in now is on. So this has been figured out a long time ago. And in Ethereum, they call this cross-shard interaction. And it'll just be very expensive to interact with a smart contract that it's not living on the same shard as your contract. But I think the more important point is proof of stake, because I don't believe that proof of stake works at scale and can stand up to attacks. I believe it's similar to, you know, having a spaceship that runs on magic instead of a propellant. So, yeah, I mean, in proof of work, you know, you burn electricity, which we call an externality, and that gives value to your Bitcoin. But if Ethereum switches to proof of stake, then it's a completely closed loop. So you are using your Ethereum inside of your Ether inside of Ethereum to get more Ether inside of Ethereum. And you're also using your Ether in Ethereum to prove to others that you're not being malicious. And that's never been proven. I mean, we have some other proof of stake coins that's been around for a while. I know what's still alive, but I think most of them are dead. So I don't think that's going to work. And I also believe the Ethereum miners of today will probably rise up and stick to the proof of work fork.
Yeah, yeah. Most of the proof of stake coins that have been in existence have either died or they've ended up having to implement other trade-offs like checkpoints and stuff.
Centralized checkpointing, yeah.
Yeah, so one of the issues that I think proof of stake or proof of stakers are going to have to deal with is sort of the liveness issue, where when you're mining, if anything goes wrong with your mining infrastructure, then sure, you're losing out on some potential profit, but you're not going to get wrecked and have your money taken away from you. Whereas if you're staking and something goes wrong and you're no longer able to participate, something basically causes you to violate one of the staking rules, and now you have to worry about getting slashed and actually losing a decent amount of money.
And the slashing is an issue for miners, but for a normal user who's just installing an Ethereum wallet on his computer, he has no way to establish which chain is the correct chain on proof of stake. He must speak to a centralized checkpoint authority to establish the fork he's supposed to be on. And from then on, he can use staking as a proof of what is the correct chain. And well, that's sort of Jameson's expertise.
It's a challenge. I think in summary, Ethereum 2 has three major changes. One is the virtual machine. That's the equivalent of moving everybody from Windows to Mac OS X. It's possible, very difficult. Next level up, we've got proof of stake. Some would argue that proof of stake pre-existed proof of work in some form, and we have not been able to get it to work up until today. Maybe they will also fix that one and be the first to get it to work. And finally, sharding. Sharding, we've seen the challenges even at MCCVR. We've had a sharding issue that caused a delay. It's not an easy problem to solve. In fact, in database engineering, the idea of a database that's distributed, that can be sharded and be read and be written to and read from multiple locations, has been something that everybody who develops a distributed database has wanted for 40 years. No one's been able to do it. Maybe Ethereum will fix all three of those problems in one go over the next year or two. I'm a doubter, and it sounds like all three of you are as well. So next, a second to last question. Does Ethereum, if they can fix all these problems and make it work, compete with or complement Bitcoin? Just yesterday, for example, Three Arrows Capital completed the single largest issuance of new wrapped Bitcoin tokens by a merchant, minting nearly 2,500 wrapped Bitcoin. And a week earlier, Alameda Research set the previous record of 2,000 wrapped Bitcoin. So it could almost be argued that Ethereum is morphing into a highly functional, complementary sidechain of Bitcoin rather than a competitor. But what are your thoughts? So let's go with Andreas.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to have to object to sidechain because that means something specific where you actually have cryptography deciding if the coins that are not on Bitcoin anymore but on Ethereum are valid or not. But if we can call it like a companion, I think it's fantastic. I mean, in Bitcoin, we've been struggling for as long as I can remember to attract new developers. Because, you know, it's not that exciting. You can you get a private key and an address, and your friends can send you some money, and you can send money to your friends. That's not very enticing for, you know, the 16-year-old developer out there looking to just flip the world upside down. So for those guys, the smart contracting, and you can see how they're doing it in DeFi, where they're actually composing smart contracts so that smart contracts made by different people are actually interacting and creating this kind of absurd but really interesting financial system. So I think Ethereum is great for Bitcoin. We're getting in all these new developers, and even if Ethereum doesn't work out or becomes too expensive, you know, these guys are probably going to save their money in BTC and not in Ether. So I would say everybody wins.
Okay, thank you. And Jonathan?
Yeah, as far as Ethereum and Bitcoin and how they would relate with each other moving forward, I think you also need to make a distinction of Ethereum, the coin, and Ethereum, like the EVM, the Ethereum virtual machine. So I think that even though the EVM, the Ethereum virtual machine, like the actual like runtime that runs the smart contracts, and basically just commits into the blockchain that is being currently run by proof of work and is planning on going to proof of stake. The EVM itself, I think, is an interesting system for kind of optimizing computations on a distributed system. It is kind of is still not very mature, but I do think that it is something that is very interesting. That even, you know, protocols like, let's say, currently the RGB protocol, which is basically trying to create a kind of like a smart contract platform / token platform on top of UTXO based blockchain, so like Bitcoin, and even they're planning on supporting Lightning Network, so you would be able to make state changes in the smart contract that are only verifiable by the two people in the channel of the Lightning channel. So some sort of system like that could use something like the EVM, and because it's all open source, I mean, you know, we would be able to basically just piggyback off of all of the Solidity contracts that have been written so far, and we would be able to use them on a system like that. That said, as far as Ethereum, the currency goes, you know, I am of the personal opinion that I think that Bitcoin is like gold, and Bitcoin is like the cryptocurrency that I personally think is going to be kind of like the leader of the space for pretty much the rest of all time, as far as cryptocurrency time goes, whenever that ends or whatever. But for Ethereum, I think that as long as the network is useful and some people are using it for something, like whether that be DeFi or whether it be some token or, like you said, some like wrapped BTC or wrapped something or other, as long as the network is being useful in some capacity, regardless of whether it's actually decentralized or there's some weird way to attack the consensus algorithm to basically kind of mess around with the state, I think people will still use it in spite of those difficulties, even if there's some way that you could attack it to kind of mess around with the state. So I think that it's Ethereum is not going to go away for a significant amount of time, at least. And in the best case scenario, I think they will definitely become a big platform moving forward. But as far as whether it complements Bitcoin or not, I am not of the mind that these wrapped Bitcoin things being kind of basically minted by centralized parties using a tool called Ethereum. So it's nothing really new than just basically having a exchange hold on to your Bitcoin and giving you a number on your login screen that says you have 10 Bitcoin, except now you can use MetaMask, and that's about it. So I don't think that the wrapped Bitcoin thing is really a complement of Bitcoin in that specific example. But I do think that Ethereum experimenting with all these new things like how to properly do proof of stake, if there is a way to do that, and how to kind of do these adversarial complex state smart contracts in a decentralized network. By studying those things, that can eventually help Bitcoin or Bitcoin-related projects like, let's say, RGB or Risk or whatever. And in the end, I think it would help out Bitcoin, and I think Bitcoin will help out Ethereum. So I think open source in general, we're all going to help each other. And I think a lot of the tribalism is unwarranted, personally.
Okay. Well, and you sort of effectively, pretty much answered my last question, but I'll put the last question to Jameson first. But first of all, Jameson, the last question is, to finish up, is what do you think the future holds for Ethereum? Jameson, can you answer that? But first of all, give us your view on the previous question, and then finish up with where you think Ethereum is going over the following years, and what is the future for Ethereum?
Well, you know, the complexity of interactions between these different networks, I think, will continue to increase. People will try to find ways to reduce the friction, to like hop between them, though you can argue about what that really means. I would say you can make an argument that we have Ethereum on Bitcoin and we have Bitcoin on Ethereum, from the sense that, you know, there is a merge mined chain now, RSK, which has the EVM and has the ability to peg Bitcoin into it. Well, I believe that's still a federated peg. So Andreas, you know, will probably object to calling RSK a side chain. Though I do believe they would like to eventually become a drive chain, which more people would probably consider a side chain. And on the flip side, until recently, the Bitcoin, quote-unquote, on Ethereum has really just been an IOU token that has generally been with a third-party custodian. Though, as of recently, with the relaunch of the Keep project, I believe we do finally have a way to cryptographically peg Bitcoin to Ethereum. So that might be more interesting for some of the more hardcore folks who would like to minimize their trust as much as possible. So where is this all going? You know, I don't think Ethereum is going away anytime soon. It will mostly be interesting to continue to watch how it deals with its growing pains. And so we've already seen what has really gone on with the DeFi boom this year, kind of similar and reminiscent to what happened in 2017 with Bitcoin, where the continued demand for gas and blockchain space and these limited resources in this distributed system have been pricing out a lot of the lower end use cases. And so you could make the argument that while, you know, DeFi may be marketing itself as a narrative of being, you know, available for, you know, the unbanked and whatnot, really at this point, with the current level of demand and constrained resources, it's mainly whales that are playing around. And in my opinion, most of the games that they're playing are just overcomplicated, obfuscated forms of gambling and, in many cases, hoodwinking and rug pulling. And, you know, that is, from a really high level, I would say a lot of the financial system is just various forms of complicated gambling, so it shouldn't really be that much of a surprise to people. So there's certainly demand and utility for this type of stuff, and I guess the real interesting question will be whether or not it will be able to get to the point that it can actually handle mainstream demand and can handle more mainstream day-to-day utility rather than just rampant wanton speculation.
Thank you for that. And Andreas, and then Jonathan, just brief words on, to sum up, what do you think the future holds for Ethereum? Andreas?
Yeah, you put me in a tough spot here because Jameson had all the good points. Yeah, like, you know what? If the market cap of Ethereum overtakes Bitcoin, I wouldn't be surprised at all. But to some of us, that's not what it's about. We're kind of more long term. And yeah, maybe Ethereum will see some competition from a UTXO-based network, like you mentioned, RSK, that can run the Ethereum code, which most people know as Solidity, but in a bit more sensible way. And yeah, also gonna have to agree with Jameson again on, you know, when you have a coin like Bitcoin or Ethereum, where there's a fee market, which means there is a, there's not unlimited block space, so we're all competing for it. And then the question is, who can afford to pay the most? And that's, of course, gonna be people who are doing gambling. If you, you know, if you look online, who's buying the expensive ad spaces, even on CoinMarketCap, they're all scams. It's because they run with such high margins that they have unlimited money. So yeah, we could end up in a situation where Ethereum is completely clogged by real degenerate gambling, for better or worse, and that the real use cases like Augur, which is a prediction market, and these kind of things, will just be completely squeezed out, maybe to their own shard, but also maybe just out of the network.
Interesting. And Jonathan, just a quick summary. I'm getting the calls from the backstage. What do you think the future holds?
Sorry about that. Can you hear me?
Yeah, can hear you.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah. So basically, I think I already kind of went over what I think is going on in the future. I don't think that Ethereum is going to go away anytime soon. I don't think it's going to implode. I think the transition to 2.0 has some possibility to create some trouble, maybe have some incidents that might cause problems for some people. But if it turns out to be the same coin or to be considered the same coin by the community, I think we will pretty much be forced to, you know, run a validating node to validate the Ethereum 2.0. And if it's decided by the community that it's a separate asset, then we'll have to run through the regulators and do all that stuff and decide whether or not we want to list it or not, which is a different subject all on its own. So I definitely think that Ethereum is doing some interesting experiments that I think will eventually be good for Bitcoin, I think that Bitcoin has a lot of things that Ethereum can learn from, and you know, obviously it has learned from So yeah, that's what I think about the future of Ethereum.
I think that's a very good way to finish this talk. The summary is Bitcoin and Ethereum can potentially complement each other. Ethereum, most people's view is that it's not going anywhere anytime soon. It has a number of technical and social challenges to overcome, but as an experiment and as popcorn inducing, popcorn eating interest, entertainment value, Ethereum will be an interesting space to look at over the coming years. I'd like to thank all of our panelists, Jameson, Jonathan, and Andreas. And thank you to the audience for bearing with us. And hopefully that you'll enjoy the rest of MCC VR today and tomorrow. Thank you very much.
Thank you.